listening to The Couples Guide Podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists, and today,
like every day,
we're debunking myths and delivering truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome.
Episode 110.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's cool. And our topic today is very relevant because there actually is a third entity in the room with us.
Mm-hmm.
There actually is something happening.
Today's episode is about demonic possession and exorcism as it relates to couples therapy.
Yes.
Just kidding. No. Today's episode is And Baby Makes Three, How to Navigate Woo-hoo! Adding That Third to Your Couple Partnership, which is something I am in the thick of. We are 2 months away.
2 months
from
out.
D-Day.
Yep. Yes. So this is something that you are personally directly thinking about, talking about in your relationship and planning for.
Yes.
And also something that you and I both see a lot in our practices, because as I was just mentioning before we start recording, yeah. A big stressor in a relationship is the very first baby. I mean, all babies, but a baby coming in.
Yeah.
And so it's a great time for couples to come into therapy and start working on stuff, talking about stuff, and clean some things up. So I definitely get a lot of that in practice. I know you're saying that that's something that you've been thinking about for yourself and with your caseload currently.
Yes, I think the concept of thirds in relationships exists even before kids come into the picture. How do you navigate work, in-laws, friends, time that you want to yourselves? Like, thirds are representative of different entities in the relationship. But the third that is created from the two of you that will both make you so happy and appreciative, but also trigger the shit out of your other unhealed stuff, that does need to be navigated with different tact, I would say. And the experience of what is it like to not just be two, and what is it like to not just be two and know that this being was created from the two of you. It's a whole different kind of third to navigate. So it's pretty cool, but it does bring up, plus you're hormonal. Oh my God, it's been the worst part of the whole thing. And I was joking with you before we started recording, like the amount of like vitriol or anger or irritability that is like unfounded, entirely unfounded. He's not changed at all. In the good ways he has, but like, he's not doing anything more to piss me off. I'm just getting irritated because my hormones are like, what if you hated him today? I'm like, great idea. That's such a good idea. Yeah, we should get in a fight for no reason. Like, why? Because at this point, and I remember this was years ago, reading this book. What was it? The Female Brain, which I've referenced on here a lot. I've read it a lot, but they were talking about the mommy brain and otherwise what is like a very stable career, very great partnership and wonderful life immediately gets called into question when you realize that you have to like vet this person. Like, is this career good enough? Is this house big enough? Is this? Because this primal mom instinct kicks on of like, are these the best provisions for my child possible? And I was always like, but if you have it navigated well, it's not going to be a problem. I was wrong. I was so wrong because I know what that felt like. And I'm like immediately questioning everything. Like, we have to upgrade this. We have to write a living will and then life insurance and blah, 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 freaking out. And he's like, okay, then, like, clearly doesn't want to piss me off. So just followed my lead, but was very terrified because I was very scary for a good portion of the pregnancy because I was just so intense about like, I have spent however many months making this life. You will not ruin it. And he's like, I'm not trying to. Like, what's going on here? It's hard to navigate because it's not just the two of you. And we had pancake at the same time because what better way to celebrate a pregnancy than to get a 3-month-old puppy? So that was a whole other third and I projected so intensely, and I knew that because I worked on it in individual therapy too and couples therapy, but I was projecting so intensely onto the dog all the baby stuff. So I, not that I would necessarily recommend doing that because it's very stressful, but it was a fast track to bring out so much of the stuff he and I hadn't addressed yet. We've addressed a lot, but that we hadn't addressed yet because we didn't have a need to. we did it in passing, but imaginary kids are the easiest to raise. So it's much different when it's like crunch time. Like talking about having kids, we had done for years, but actually planning for like, this is happening, here it is. It's a different tone that gets set to the conversation because it will become real in just a few months. So it's a lot to navigate.
That's one of the expectations I wanted to highlight is that it will bring up new stuff in the relationship. And that's a good thing if you plan on it and expect it. That, like you said, when it shifts from hypothetical, how we want it to be or what we're thinking about, to, oh, it's this is really happening or this has happened. Yeah. We now have our newborn home. It is going to bring out other things in the relationship because it just reality is going to hit, and not in a bad way if you plan for it, or at least you know that's going to happen. Because I think that's one of the things that I've had couples come in like early on, like in a consult, and going like, oh, no, this was scary. This happened. Now we're in this place. And really just kind of normalizing that process from my chair, going, yeah, of course it came up. That's okay. And that's why you're here. We're going to talk about it. And for anyone listening, like, and get ready for these new issues to be either discovered or maybe things like zoomed in a little bit closer or focused on a little more. And that's fine.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be my first message, is plan for that so that you're not catastrophizing. Oh no, our relationship is quote unquote horrible because all of a sudden it's gone to shit. It's like, no, it hasn't gone to shit. Just there's new stuff there. And it just so happens.
It will be shitty for a year. It'll be shitty for a year. I'm just going to let you know.
But it doesn't mean your relationship is shit.
No. And it does. And you will question divorce. You will question why you chose this person. You will look at them with such disdain. You don't even recognize yourself. I'm just prepping for people who are listening to this. It's the real, like, it gets so real that you're just like, what? Like, why did I choose this? And when you properly work through it and you are able to bring it up in couples therapy, you learn different skills and you are able to voice things that you're afraid of. That's what helped me the most, was sharing my fears, my doubts, my apprehensions, also my joys and excitements. And because the man is not the one changing their body and usually their career during this whole time, it doesn't impact you guys at the same time that it impacts us. Yes, there's a huge transition and a shift, but like biologically, nothing's changing for you yet, really. Like, yes, there's some hormonal changes and you're more sensitive, but it's not the same as like feeling on a day-to-day basis those changes and having to make those choices of like, okay, when do I stop working? Do I stop working? What is that going to look like? Like, we have a time window of a countdown of like, these decisions have to be made. And then men are like, cool, a baby. Like, it's just so different. And being able to voice that in couples therapy of like, what are your expectations around how our relationship's going to look like? How many, you know, do we want to travel before the baby gets here? How do we want to celebrate just it, the last ever time being just the two of us for a while? Not that you'll never take date nights or vacations, but this is the only time that will ever just be the two of us ever again in our whole lives. And that's huge. And that's something to really consider, because a lot of couples, I always used to joke, and I still joke this way, but it's like, you want to get so sick of your partner that you're like, I'm ready to never sleep in again on a Saturday. Let's do this. Like, if you're planning to have a kid, you want to be prepared for it, because it really does change you. And even the mental capacity it takes up being pregnant and being otherwise, like the maternal preoccupation of like, what kind of mom am I going to be? What kind of parent do I want to be? What kind of parent do I want my parenting partner to be? Like, it brings up so much of these deeper conversations that having a couples therapist can really help you and your partner to flesh this out, because the first year there is a statistical marital satisfaction decline after you have a baby. You just can't possibly be giving all to your partner and all to your baby all at the same time. So I would recommend not expecting that to be the case and prep your partner for that fourth trimester. You can't be my priority. My job is to literally keep this baby alive. My body is biologically predisposed to this. So if I am not as attentive to you, give me a heads up, but also let's get ahead of what is going to be realistic for our marital partnership compared to the parenting partnership, or our relational partnership compared to the parenting part of it, and know that it's a phase. Kids eventually get older. They will need different things at different times. It's not going to be the newborn infancy a nightmare, if it is a nightmare forever, that's a part of life. It's a phase of life.
Yeah, I think to add on to that, a good example that couples talk about all the time is, of course, the exhaustion when you have an infant, because you're not sleeping well, you're really, you know, having to deal with that. That is a phase. You know, the little one will grow and will eventually be able to sleep, and so will the parents. And also everyone will kind of learn and adjust, like, oh, we figured out how to make it work. And there's going to be these tired times. Okay, that's a common discussion. But for our, you know, from my lens, where I talk about it, it's like, so when you're tired, your patient's compassion tank is just empty. You just don't have the emotional bandwidth for what you normally would. And that's okay. So it's just remembering that both of us in this relationship, our patient's compassion tank is empty. Any bit that we have is used on our new baby, and that's appropriate. That's fine.
So
be ready for that, and also acknowledge that. I think it's always great. I say all the time, name it, detainment, label that that's what's going on. And then this all came from your point of know that it is a phase, and know that if you stay in partnership and work as a team, even if you are without patience and compassion, that tank will get refilled before you know it. Eventually, you'll get to it. And that's why people do choose to have multiple children.
Because... and the amnesia of childbirth and the joy of, if I grew up with siblings, I want that for my kids. Like, all of those things eventually take over, thankfully, that stress and that pain. It's normal to be stressed when you have an added responsibility of caring for anything, specifically a human life. Like, that's, and just recognize.
And transition. Just changes. Yeah. This is like one of the, not just one, it's literally the biggest change of life. So everyone's learning everything new. Everyone's figuring it out. I don't think
you're both, like... both you and your partner are figuring it out. That's what I also want to touch on, is this disparity often of, because we're in prep mode, like the amount of books I have, I've already read and done trainings, like just for my job, like I feel more well prepared than I would had it just been like, oh, I'm a person who got, you know, pregnant. But there's still this pressure. And I knew from working with so many couples prior to this and having had previous relationships with people who had kids, that I'm like, that is sometimes natural disparity, that the guy does not want to read as much. It doesn't mean that there's not guys out there who are not like, I read this book, I this, I that. But that might not be what they're leaning towards. So that was not an expectation I had out of my partner from the get-go. He's more than willing to hear me out. I'll cite the things. I'll share articles or whatever. He's open to it. But that's just not something that he would seek out on any topic. That's just not kind of how he is as a person. And so I didn't expect that out of him or punish him for like, I'm not the only one doing all the prep. How could you blah, blah, blah? Because he's very much so, we will figure it out when she gets here. Because that's kind of his mindset when it comes to life. And we worked on this in couples therapy too. He's a fireman. They don't go on patrol to prevent fires. They get called once they're in. I was going to be a cop. That was, I've shared that, I think, on the podcast before. My brain is wired like that. Let's prevent, let's this, let's that. I'm like the fire inspector that's like, that outlet needs to be replaced. This could be a hazard. Let's do this instead. Our brains just function differently. So we had to really work to compromise. What is the most realistic amount of preparation for this new thing, this new transition, and what can theoretically wait until we meet her, and then we get to know her personality and can tend to her specific needs? Like, what are things that have to be settled before, and what are things that we could figure out once she's here? Because he was like, let's just figure out everything once she's here. And I'm like, you're fucking delusional, dude. Like, that's not going to happen. I fucking wish that my brain had that setting that I just didn't worry, but it's not going to happen.
Well, it's like, you want, like, as you said, like finding that balance of something settled. You're mentioning about like, you know, with your little lady, like, and you know, her personality, that'll determine what you do. Also, you two are going to be learning what actually works for you two. You might think one, gosh, I'm so not a parent. I'm trying to think, like, what's an example? You might think one crib setup is right. And you love it. You plan it. It seems cool. And then when you start get the reality of, like, what your sleeping patterns are like, or how you like having, you know, the thing set up, you realize, oh, we actually don't like this crib setup. We want a whole different thing. And that's okay. But that's the whole point of the transition. That's the whole point of, you can plan certain stuff because you, you know, A, you do need some things ready, But B, a lot of the planning is just for us to have our fears soothed before we're actually parents. And acknowledging the difference and then also being ready to be flexible. With your example and your relationship.
That's been my biggest struggle.
I could see that, but that goes to like you two, like you have good skill sets, like, and they're complementary in that space. And that's trying to remember.
Yes.
Like, cool. So you're going to be more in the planning phase, thinking ahead, get it ready. And then he's going to be more in the cool. I got you in the moment when like you need X, Y, Z.
Exactly.
So awesome.
It's a good balance.
Little side note, I guess, but just something to observe.
No, but it's the expectation that things like, and I got in this discussion with my dad too, because we were talking about like a birth plan. He's like very well-meaning, but he's like, nothing ever goes according to plan, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, so since when did you have a uterus? Like, that's so weird. What did you do for your birth plan? Oh, wait, you never had the kids. Thank you very much. And he's like, okay. And it's, you know, been 30, 40 years since he's had kids. So it's a lot different, of course, and just what's available and what's not, you know, the knowledge that's available even. So I remember talking to him. And Brennan was there too. And we're going back and forth. And he's like, you know, sometimes Brennan was giving me feedback after. He's like, you know, sometimes you could just like agree and then just end the conversation. And I was like, that is a you thing. You're more the peacemaker where you'll just be like, yeah, sure. Sounds good to end it. I will go toe to toe, respectfully, of course, but I'm not going to sit there and be like, yeah, that's a great idea. If I think it's not a good idea. And I was trying to explain to my dad, the plan is not for the baby. The plan is for the mother. The plan is for us to even have, even if it's a false sense of control, some sense of control that we at least have knowledge. I'd like it to go this way, but if there's a need for an emergency C-section or whatever else, I would like to be prepped for that mentally, because birth trauma is a thing for the parent as much as it could be for the baby. Like, I think some people like the prep because it helps them feel more contained and more soothed. And if you're coming into inviting a third party or a third and the baby into your relationship, to come at it from as calm of a place as possible is what I would recommend. So there's that need for how much prep is prep and how much prep is over preparation, that if it didn't go according to that plan, you're going to be so disappointed or you're going to be punitive to your partner because you're sleep deprived and you feel very achy and you're not being contained the way you thought. How much flexibility is needed too? And that's something that is huge. Compromise is huge when it comes to this. Nobody is the expert when it comes to this. We always joke imaginary kids are the easiest to raise. Like, you could have all things go according to plan, then your kid's like, I have colic, good luck, and I'm not gonna sleep and you're not gonna eat and I'm gonna tear you and you're gonna need an emergency C-section, so joke's on you. Like, it may not go according to plan at all, but having some semblance of how are we going to handle, how do we want to be with each other when things go according to plan? And how can we treat each other when things don't go according to plan? Can we have a code word where we're too tapped out that I don't want to be questioned and I just need you to take over? Can we agree on minimum standards of care for bath time, bedtime, diaper, this, like, how much can we figure out and still be respectful of one another? Because it does take a hit. How much you love and look at them of like, oh, they're so hot, I want to be with them. You might look at them and be like, if you change the diaper like that one more fucking time, like, you don't know how you're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think on the plan example, I think it's good to acknowledge like the use and the pitfalls of it. The use being, if you get on the same page, it helps you talk ahead of time about expectations and what you're doing.
Yeah.
And also, and this is what I think some people don't keep in mind, is like, for some people, having the plan can be really useful so that if it goes off plan, it's kind of like a compass point. It allows people, having a plan allows some people to get off plan easier. Because if there isn't a starting point or a template, it can be really overwhelming to juggle all of the different factors that can go into
something.
And certainly having a new human household is a lot of factors. So a plan has a really great use to be able to go, cool, this is what we're striving to. That's not happening. That's okay. We're not going to do that plan anymore. Yeah. But it can give someone who has a brain like this the opportunity to go, cool, I'm comfortable moving off the plan now that I know it's not happening, as opposed to the kind of chaos of there's no plan. There's too many choices. Plans narrow down choices, give focus, and allows flexibility and improvisation. So that can be useful.
And when you're sleep deprived, you will not be wanting to make a plan. That's what I talked about him. I'm like, the version of me that you see now, which is already sleep deprived because you get up 9 times to pee during the middle of the night, et cetera, plus the dog, like I'm not even well resourced now. I will be even further worse resourced. So we're not going to be coming up with a plan while I am sleep deprived. Cause I can tell you the plan is going to be, you deal with it. I'm going to go to my parents' house to take a nap. And that's not a good plan because that's not going to be a helpful plan. So I liked, like you said, at least we can have something to deviate from rather than scraping together something to move towards. That's the point of setting expectations around a plan. Even if it all goes to shit, at least you had something in your back pocket. You were going to say the pitfalls of having one.
But yeah, the pitfall I'm thinking about though is like kind of anything. If you have an expectation, and you were hinting at this, if you have an expectation and you're too married to it, then it can add more stress or frustration. That's where you could get resentful or something like that. Be like, oh no, it's not going to plan. So that it's always the balance, but the pitfall is if you have the plan and you have to go off of it, don't be too rigid with the plan. You can't predict how that's going to go, and there's no like objective truth of like how much to stay on plan versus off. It's just important to label the pitfall of use the plan to help you organize and make clear decisions even when you're moving off of it. If the plan becomes stressful and contentious because it's like, oh, we're not following the plan, and now you're more invested in like following the plan than what the plan was there for, that's danger territory. That's, oh, wait a second.
You'll get in fights.
We're adding more stress than what the tool is supposed to be helping with.
Yes, we have lived through that too, even just crate training. Pancake, I was telling you before, she's like over it now, and she's already way too big to fit. And she's potty trained. She doesn't destroy the house. Like, she's good. But we're looking at that, and bedtime, I mean, talk about a parallel to parenting. Bedtime was so stressful for me because I'm like, I'm the preferred parent right now because he has a different work schedule and I'm with her more. So bedtime was like a 45-minute fight of me like massaging her. She fell asleep outside of the crate. I'd have to scoop her in the crate and then she'd whine for like 20 minutes. And I'm just like, I hated bedtime and I couldn't even enjoy when we went out to dinner or date nights or whatever, even if we dropped her off at my parents' house. Very, very similar to parenting. I would imagine I'm going to listen to this in a few months and be like, I was right, that I would dread it. And I couldn't even enjoy date night because I was so focused on what the next 2 hours were going to be that I wasn't even myself. I couldn't let loose and be my, you know, just me and my partner self. And then when we were loosening up about that, now we'll let her sleep on the edge of the bed, whatever, it makes it easier because I'm less stressed. So I'm actually getting more sleep. I'm more well-resourced. We're not fighting as much because, to your point, I'm not so adherent to this arbitrary plan that clearly doesn't work anymore. So we needed to make a new plan, and being flexible of, we should still have some semblance of a plan, maybe like a bedtime, but the process can look different. That can help when you bring in a third into the relationship, because babies are going to change so rapidly, and what works for even a week, sometimes the next week, throw it out the window. Like, good luck letting that work again, because it's just not going to happen. So being flexible but committed to having some structure is the recommendation that I would make for couples who are planning on or who are having that third, who are navigating like, how am I going to deal with this? A really good book that I've loved and have recommended a lot is How to Not Hate Your Husband After Kids. Very good title. If you're pregnant, read it as prep. If you have already had a baby, even if your kids are 14, like, read it. It is so helpful because it gives you tactical advice and it helps explain what's going on for you behind the scenes. And a lot of it has to do with expectations and feeling frustrated and let down for things that we either asked for but weren't direct enough about, or we didn't ask for, we assumed would happen, and then get frustrated because it didn't end up going that way. So really good book. Highly recommend that book.
Love it. There's a little bit of an emotional bridge there to what I want to shift to, which is something you mentioned earlier about the fears that really that get brought up. That of course happened. I think you mentioned somewhat in like the hormone space, but it doesn't matter. Like both partners, now there is this thing that is so valuable, this child, this baby that matters so much. Like, both partners' fears are going to escalate a lot. And that's where a lot of like this longing, desire, the stress comes from, is wanting to make sure, you know, you're successfully keeping this kid alive. So I wanted to go back to that, because I think the fear component is something I look at so much in relationships, and how to, especially when your patience and compassion tank are empty, sit and talk about fear, sit and acknowledge, oh yeah, I'm being snappy because I'm actually scared about something. You know, I'm frustrated because I want this thing to go a certain way. Well, it's because I want to make sure that our kid is safe. Or, you know, getting to a deeper kind of individual place, like I'm scared I'm not a good enough parent, or I'm scared that I'm going to do something wrong, or going into the relational space of, oh, I'm actually scared that if I reach out to you, my partner with this, like your patience, compassion tank is empty and you're not going to be there for me. You're not going to, you know, I'm scared that I'm going to be alone in dealing with this. So there's lots of fears that, of course, something as important and valuable as a child can really bring up in us. Oh, which, by the way, that's that goes to that first point we made earlier. Like, hey, new things are going to be discovered. It's because stuff like fears are going to, like, get brought on.
Yep.
And I think that's such just an important thing to think about when you're getting ready to have your first kid, or when you're going through this really difficult transition and you have your newborn. What fears are there? And exploring that, talking about that, and sharing that with your partner is so...
It's so helpful.
My big thing.
So helpful. And to do it in couples therapy is even more helpful, because you have a neutral third party there to hold the space for the fears, but also to translate if one partner's fear is eclipsing them so much, they're almost like deaf to your fear, or we can't hear it because it's like in competition. It helps to have that filter, because a lot of the fear that I experienced was how seriously I take parenting, and how even when I've been a therapist, I am a therapist. And even as long as I've worked as a therapist working with teens and families, that is something that is no joke. Whether you planned it or not, if you chose to bring the child to term and bring it life and raise it, you have a duty and a responsibility, and how you parent that child shapes the way they look at the whole world. It's a pretty big fucking deal. It's the most important job you'll ever have. And that's like a hill I will die on. That's how seriously I take it personally too, of course. And I'm not saying that he doesn't take it that seriously, but he's so much more gifted at going with the flow than I am. And that has led him to a great career, great second career, great this. Like he has it evidence in his mind of like, but my way works for me. And I have it in my mind, my way works for me. So when it comes to that balance of that fear, my fear is if we both go with the flow, fill in the blank. Maybe his fear is if we're both so structured, it's not only fears about what is it going to be like, it's this identity shift. Because you're not just you when you become a partner, you're you and your partner. And you're not just you and your partner when you have a baby, because it's you and your partner maintaining the romantic side of things, plus this whole other role of keeping a life alive. And if you have competing ideas or competing fears or unvoiced fears around that second phase, you know, or that second role that you're adding in of being a parent, that's going to have you clash romantically. So if you can learn to bring those fears up in couples therapy and that was even one of mine of like, I'm afraid because I've seen the statistics, I am a bringing baby home workshop certified, whatever the title is, educator, like I've lived it, I've studied it, I see it, I'm biased. My fear is that this will be our undoing. My fear is that we won't love each other anymore. My fear, and the hormones do ramp those fears up for women, especially. For me to be able to share that with him made it so much easier, because there was like a few weeks there where I was just shoving it down, planning for the right time, not just like, oh, I'm going to ignore it. I was like, compartmentalize it. This is not the right time. Compartmentalize it, work on an individual. And then it got to the point where like, it just came out one night. And I was like sobbing, and I was like just sharing my everything that was on my heart. And he was like, okay, well, clearly there's a lot here. And it was like 10:30 at night, the worst possible time. And the next morning we talked about it more. And then we started couples therapy, and it helped so much because I was able to voice like, here's where I'm coming from. It's not that I doubt you, but I have a different childhood upbringing than you do. And that informs my fears, is that in some ways, my fear is that the way I was raised to come true won't come true. And the fears is that the way I didn't like that I was raised will come true, in summary of all that I was going through personally. So being able to voice that helped a lot, and being able to take feedback from your partner of, hey, I'm worried that this might happen for our kid because I see this come up in your family system, was also hugely helpful. because we might not agree on the way to raise a child. So picking one common parenting style is something we worked on in couples therapy. And then our therapist was like, you'll both do it in your own way, but you'll agree that, like, it's kind of like speaking a specific language. Like, we'll both speak Spanish, so to speak, but we'll have a different accent. We might change certain words. We might do Spanglish at certain times. Like, but we at least agree we're teaching the kids Spanish, to draw a metaphor. So that at least helped me to feel more comfortable of, like, plus there's an accountability partner there that if anything went wrong, either on my end or on his end, I feel comfortable bringing it up in therapy of, like, hey, this isn't working for me. Or he might be able to, like, hey, this isn't working for me. And then we get help from somebody who can guide us, who has had sleep, ideally, who is not also navigating the exact waters we are at the exact same time. And then we can go from there. So having a third, in that sense, having your couples therapist be the third while you're raising the baby that's a third is like a helpful northern star, if you will.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that as a side note, that is one of the benefits of having a couples therapist and why I'm really excited to start couples therapy and premarital counseling and then kind of just like have that person set up ready to rock because there'll be tons of stuff that when cases compassionate tank is low, just go in and, and have that person to support you. And that's what I love doing as a therapist. And one of the big ones on these fear fronts that I support couples with is always slowing down and doing what you described as making sure that each partner can just hear the other person's fears. Like, something I see all the time, really common, is one person will start sharing what they're, like, a fear, what they're upset about, distressed about, worried about. And then the other partner, out of care, goes into, like, problem solve mode. Okay, cool, let's do this, let's do that, let's do this. Or goes into clarification mode. Like, oh, actually, no, no, that's not what's going on. Don't, you're scared about this? Let me clarify the situation in a different way for you, so that's not scary. Thing is, when we jump to problem solve or clarification, when our partner's sharing fears, it can often come off as invalidating or confrontational, or can actually stoke the fear that if it's the fear, like, for example, I mentioned a fear earlier, a fear that I'm not good enough at whatever, you know, being a parent. You go into problem solve or clarification mode, it can actually feel like, this fear is coming true.
I am. Exactly.
So, like, as a practical thing, like, what I support couples with when it is about sharing these fears, I really start couples out with just be okay with just understanding the other person's fear. You don't have to change it. You don't have to solve it yet. You don't have to, you might have some good ideas about it, but start with hearing it, understanding it. And I say it in a way, you know, I've said this on the podcast all the time about make sure your partner feels understood. So it's not that you get to say, oh, I understand what you're scared about, check. No, that's not the check mark. It's checking with your partner and, you know, making sure, like, okay, does it feel like I get it? Do you feel understood, my partner? Do you feel like I get what you're scared about? Did I paraphrase back well enough to you? Like, does it make sense? Does it seem like it's landing emotionally? Do you feel like I'm getting it? And did I validate, wow, that I can see now why from your perspective it is scary?
Yes, that is so helpful.
Once you hit that check mark, boom, partner feels understood. They feel understood why it's, why they're, you know, the fear is there. Then you can go into, I can share some of my fears. Or then you can go into, let's try to address this fear, problem solve it. Or let me, you know, I got this idea that you're scared, I understand it. I have a different idea. Let me clarify maybe something that might be helpful for you. Always, always start with just sitting with each other's fears and hearing them and just being okay with it. I don't think it's something we talk enough about in our culture. We like to jump to get it done, get it solved, stop the fear from happening.
Solution,
just get rid of the
fear. Don't be worried. Just don't think, don't feel that way. Just don't be afraid. Oh, sure, thanks. Great. You should write a book. So helpful. Yeah, having that empathy and validation.
More with just sitting with it. And, oh, that's another point that all the time is like, and sometimes just when you're sitting with your partner and their fear, that alone is all they need. It's like, oh, cool, it's scary, and my partner's with me, not trying to do anything, and they just need to sit with me in the fear. And that actually is a relational, that's how your relation can actually soothe the fear. You can tap into this great thing. And lo and behold, you don't have to do much. You should just sit and be there with them. You should sit there and go, oh, yeah, that's, that is scary. I get that.
90% of the time with us, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling of like, hey, I'm afraid. And for me, a lot of my fear, understandably, was around identity change, identity loss. How am I, like you said, how am I going to be as a parent? How is he going to be as a parent? Where did we get along? We clearly have family as like one of our top core values. So there's, if he weren't him, and if he didn't have the background and upbringing, the secure attachment, all that other stuff that made me very safe with him, I would be scared even more shitless than I am just by existing, that it's like, oh, it's going to happen. It's a huge transition. But because we had had those empathy laden conversations, the validation, and we got in the practice of sharing vulnerably other topics before parenthood entered our lives, it was just calming down a bit and applying those same skills to this topic and having him validate, even if he doesn't, he doesn't have that fear. He is far more confident when it comes to like what it's going to be like. And half of me is like, you're delusional, because that's how I comfort myself. Whether it's true or not, it has nothing to do with him. It'd probably be any partner I was having a kid with that I would say that. And the other half of me is like, you know what? I trust you though, because I see that there's proof in that in your own family system and your upbringing. You saw what that was like. You have lived what it was like to have that attunement and secure attachment. I trust you. I can lean in and let and follow your lead on this. And then there are going to be some times where you just have to let me be neurotic. And you just have to hold space for that and hear me out. And why am I freaked out? And all I really need you to say at the end of it is, that makes sense. I get that. Like, whether or not it comes true, to be determined. But that makes sense. If you think this is going to happen, why you'd feel this way, I can get behind that. That is the most level of attunement that I have needed to see. And I think being able to vocalize that is something that I worked on in my own individual therapy of like, what did I really need from, what did I need? And what did I need from him? Because there were things I needed that he couldn't give to me that only the doula could, the midwife, the therapist, the this. Like, not every need is going to be met by your partner either, even when it comes to parenting. There's going to be times where you have to tag somebody else in or outsource. And that's another conversation we had too for that prep is, what do we want our village to look like? Because he is a shift worker and can be gone for 3 to 4 days at a time at times, or home for 3 to 4 days at a time, which is equally maddening in a different direction because it's like such an adjustment. How do we want help? And we got in kind of a sticking point, I would say. It wasn't a fight, but it was a sticking point of like, I really want a doula. He's like, we don't need that. My parents did it without one. So did mine, is what I told him. I said, but neither of our parents were firemen. So we can't really parallel what our parents did with this because they didn't have the same career. So can you be a little more open to that? He talked to some guys at work. He came home and he was like, I'm open to it. I'm not opposed. They said, get the help wherever you can. And that also helps me because that person who's the doula is part emotional support for the mom. They mother the mother. So I will be better resourced to not be as snappy at you. Like, I was highlighting all of the strengths and he was like, okay, no problem. But when you think, when you come at it from the perspective of like, we should be able to do it all on our own. Yeah. But we have saved, we've make a good living. Why would we struggle when we don't need to? There's already going to be times where you're going to struggle as a new parent. If there's anything you can get ahead of or outsource, please do it ahead of time is my best advice. Ask for a housekeeper on your baby registry. Like, do things that you know will help future sleep deprived, poorly resourced, bleeding from all parts you, that you won't be as stressed and be able to ask for help. That is something that's so crucial in new parenthood. If you don't have family around, or if you have family around but you can't rely on them, find other support systems if possible, even other systems that you can implement in the household ahead of time, like the fair play method that we've talked about. Try to systematize, not plan, but try to come up with some systems to help things run more smoothly so you're not as frantic as you otherwise would be. If that can include hiring out a different third, housekeeper, doula, what have you, highly recommend doing it because you don't have to do it all yourself. And that's something that is a narrative I've worked on in my own individual therapy that a lot of couples do. Well, if you won't do it, then I'll just do it all myself. That's too stressful. It's okay to ask for help.
I would put a button on that, like, yeah. Find and activate your support systems before and after.
It's,
I don't know why I find it an annoying saying, even though I think it's so true, but it really does take a village. I hate it that saying. I don't know why, but it's such a great saying. And I believe so much about community and connection. I don't know why it rubs me the wrong way. But
you'll have to address that.
I'll need to talk to my therapist about that. Why?
But we used to raise children in a community. That's why it was easier, because there was truly a village mentality and actuality. And we're different now. We transplant ourselves. We pick a person and we're like, I love you. Let's move across the country away from all of our support systems. If you have an unhealthy family system, yay you for escaping. But if you can stay around your family and maybe work on your relationship with them, it is beneficial to not do it all alone, or not do it just the two of you, because we are not meant to do it just the two of us or just single. We do need to have help. So ask for help. That would be my final piece of advice.
Find and activate. Yeah.
Yes.
RK, I could probably talk more about this actually, but I think it's a good place to wrap. And very topical for one of the co-hosts here today.
It's Ryan. So, Ryan's pregnant. Yeah.
Definitely me. Definitely. Yeah.
Surprise.
I'm bringing in my thing. So cool. Thanks everyone for listening. Let's see. If you got questions for us, and you want us to answer anything on the podcast, shoot us an email, ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com.
And we will see you for next episode.
Thanks so much, everyone. Take good care.